Welcome to the Strategic Investor. Join us as we interview some of the world's most productive asset managers and uncover sophisticated and unique investment strategies in the markets. Here is your host, Charlie Wright.
Hello and welcome to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio, where we bring you investment strategies you are not hearing elsewhere. I'm Charlie Wright. We're very glad you've joined us. Got a special treat today. We'd like to welcome back from several times, Brendan Ahern, Chief Investment Officer for CraneShares, a family of China-focused ETFs. Brendan, welcome back to Strategic Investor Radio.
Thank you for having me, Charlie.
So, Brendan, it's always a joy and a pleasure to have you. You've been a repeated guest on Strategic Investor Radio. And interesting things are happening in China on more than one front. You guys now have 10 ETFs, and you have just finished a 10-city tour with a roadshow telling about the inclusion of mainland-listed Chinese securities into the MSCI Global Standard Indexes, which just started June 1st here. So you tell us what that means. Well, we're going to have you tell us today what that means. Let's start, for those who may not be aware, give us 30 seconds on who CraneShares is.
So CraneShares is a provider of China-focused exchange-traded funds. We believe that the new China economic sectors, such as healthcare, clean energy, technology, internet, and the e-commerce, will lead China's economy going forward. At the same time, China is opening up. The Shanghai and Shenzhen are the fourth and seventh largest stock exchanges in the world. China's onshore bond market is the third largest bond market in the world, and they've historically been excluded from indices due to a lack of access. And so we've garnered access in advance of these coming inclusions. Most importantly, Charlie, I believe we provide a balanced perspective on what's happening in China's economy and capital markets so investors can make an educated decision.
You know, I'd like to build on that for just a second here before we get to our subject. Last interview, we talked about the One Belt, One Road project of China, and that it includes, as I recall, 60-plus companies, several trillion dollars, probably, if not the most, one of the most ambitious commercial projects ever undertaken. And yet I read next to nothing about it in the press. We talked about that last time. I read the Wall Street Journal every day. I read Barron's. I read Fortune. And I see next to nothing about the One Belt, One Road project. So again, in 30 seconds, what does the financial press have against positive news about China?
Well, I think ultimately it's very hard to understand sometimes a country that maybe people have never been to, 12-hour time zone for those of us on the East Coast, different language. So I think One Belt, One Road, China has a very high savings rate. Those savings have been invested in infrastructure, both railways and highways, as well as telecommunication and technology. And China is going to be exporting that infrastructure know-how to countries within the emerging market and frontier world that don't have a high level of savings. And China is going to build, you know, help build that in order to build stronger economic ties. So we think it's literally we're just a few weeks away from many of the initial investments. Those projects are going to be funded very, very shortly. There's a number under the way, but the One Belt, One Road is really going to start kicking off the next several weeks, and we'll be certainly very much excited about, you know, do we potentially hold the construction companies and the infrastructure companies that are going to make One Belt, One Road feasible.
Yeah, it just sounds like a very significant opportunity. But that's not the focus of today. The focus of today, you guys just finished an 8-city tour giving a roadshow on this change of the MSCI Global Standard Indexes. So tell us about this and why it is such a big deal.
Ultimately, investors over the last two decades have made a dramatic shift into passive investment vehicles, both exchange-traded funds and index funds. There's never been as much money invested passively as right now. And ultimately, what that means is that index methodologies dictate what is owned and not owned by index funds and ETFs, but how well do we really understand those index methodologies? So last June, on June 20th last year, MSCI announced that a select number of Shanghai and Shenzhen listed companies would be added to their indices for the first time, that China had previously not allowed foreign investors into those markets, but they've done a number of advances over the last 15 years, slowly opening the door to a point where MSCI can add these 226 securities. Now, why is that important? Well, MSCI has 13.9 trillion of both active and passive assets benchmarked to their indices. So the addition of these securities means a very significant amount of money is going to have to flow into those securities. Within MSCI Emerging Markets, which has almost 2 trillion benchmarks, these securities that are being added will raise China's weight from just about 30% today to over 40%. This isn't a one-time inclusion. It's going to take several years to get these companies, their exposure, fully into the MSCI indices. Now, over 4 years ago, we listed MSCI's exact definition of Chinese A shares with our Crane Shares Bocera MSCI China A ETF. And ticker KBA. So we've tried to proverbially skate to where the puck is going by owning the securities that are being added, not only to MSCI indices, but that passive managers globally are going to be required to buy.
Okay, and so bottom line of all of that?
So ultimately, investors don't have to wait for this multi-year dial-up where China is going to go from 30% to over 40%, because we know the securities that we hold today in KBA will represent an additional 17% China weight within MSCI Emerging Markets. So we allow investors to be able to fully dial up that China exposure today without having to wait for their broad-based emerging markets index fund or ETF to do it for them.
Okay, so this will mean that more of these Chinese companies will be purchased because they will be included in this index.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think it brings up a broader question of just China is just so much larger than other emerging market countries. Numerical number of stocks that represent China is four times as much as South Korea or Taiwan, which are the second and third largest weights within MSCI emerging markets. So China's 30%, they're about 15 and 12%. That China's just so, India, right? India is less than 80 stocks represent the definition of India for emerging market investors. India is one third the GDP per capita as China. China is as the second largest economy in the world by GDP, is so much larger, Charlie. And that's why we believe that this historical lack of access, now that that's being resolved, there's going to be considerable amounts more invested in China in the years to come. But ultimately, people are going to need a good partner to understand what's happening there in Crane Shares with our dedicated, singular focus on China. We endeavor to earn that trust.
Yeah. Now, help us understand just a little bit here. Do you know the exact companies that will be added to the MSCI index?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, they're the holdings of our KBA ETF. Those full holdings are available on a daily basis on craneshares.com. And those are the exact 226 securities that passive managers globally just bought on June 1st. The next inclusion is on September 1st. This represents just 5% of the total weight of these companies is going to be allocated between this past June 1st and the coming September 1st. So there's another 95% more exposure to these companies is coming in, and that's what's going to raise China from 30% to over 40% is MSCI will slowly dial up this exposure to the securities within, say, MSCI Emerging Markets and other broad-based indices over the next several years. Just you have so much passive money, you just can't go in and buy, ultimately what could be tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars of passive. They just can't, you can't go in and buy that much of a security in one shot. So
right.
They're gonna have to leg in over many, many years.
I see. Well, this is certainly newsworthy here. Let's ask some questions. People are concerned about investing in China. You know that much better than me or anybody listening, I'm sure. Okay, so let's ask some specific questions about investing in China. Number one, financial leverage. Okay, over the past years, many people have seen this as posing a significant risk to the overall Chinese economy. Tell us, how do you see financial leverage?
So China does have a high debt-to-GDP ratio. What I think is going to surprise people over the next year is that ratio is very likely coming down. Having just returned from China this past weekend, spent a week there meeting with a lot of independent research firms, bigger research firms from big securities firms. It's very clear that China is aware of the potential threat that this high debt to GDP ratio entails, but they're doing something about it. They're very much focused on deleveraging a lot of the big companies. That this is really corporate debt. It's not government debt. It's not household debt. It's really corporate debt. So there's a big movement to one, make it harder to borrow, so they're tightening monetarily. And then two, they're going to let smaller players that don't have a systematic or broad market threat, they're going to let them go bankrupt. They're going to merge some companies away. But I think the world will be shocked that I firmly believe China's debt to GDP ratio will be declining in the next several years, because there's at a very high level, a very much strong awareness of the potential issues that can implement or affect the economy, and they're doing something about it.
Okay, well, that's good news here. Question number two. We hear a lot about, in China, there are these state-owned enterprises, SOEs. This include any of those, or are all of these completely private companies? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the it's interesting. So many of the private companies have listed here in the United States, like an Alibaba or JD.com. So the U.S.-listed Chinese companies tend to be private companies. Private companies also list on the Shenzhen Stock Exchange, which, again, is historically just been for investors in China. Foreigners have not been allowed. So that would be like a company like Ping An Insurance, which is just a massive, massive company in China. That's listed on the Shenzhen. The state-owned enterprises tend to list on the Shanghai Stock Exchange. That includes four of the largest banks in the world. So you do have a lot of big companies. So what's happening with this MSCI decision? Yes, there's some securities within our KBA. There are state-owned enterprises, but we do think there's a lot of reforms taking place. Just 14 right now on KBA, which is a significant discount to say.
Okay, so tell us about corporate governance. Everybody believes that, hey, financial information, accounting information, etc., coming out of China cannot or should not be embraced without a closer look. Why do you guys feel comfortable and confident with the corporate governance and accounting from there?
Well, I think, one, we want to be very diversified, that we don't want heavy single stock exposure just in case there is an issue with a company. I think that's, in general, a good policy for investors to have. And certainly what we're doing should be part of a broader diversified portfolio. I've gone all in, but no one else should. So one, we like the idea that we're diversified across KBA, hundreds of securities, our largest weighting, low single digits. So, that diversity helps us sleep at night. I think ultimately China endeavors, as the second largest economy, to be recognized as a global player, and that means adhering to global standards. And so just as the International Monetary Fund designated the renminbi a reserve currency back in October 1st of 2016, I think ultimately this MSCI decision shows that Chinese corporations have to adhere to global standards, since global investors are going to be investing in these same companies that we're invested in. So I think this corporate governance issue is certainly going to improve in the years to come, and certainly the trajectory is already in place that things are improving.
Well, I hope so. Now let's talk about the two word challenge these days, trade war. So what should we be concerned about, a trade war, and if not, why not?
So, I mean, ultimately, we should be, because we're, most of us listening are invested in U.S. equities. U.S. technology companies comprise 25% of the S&P 500. About 15% of those earnings are generated in China. At the same time, when we looked at the portfolio, the securities within our KBA, or this MSCI Inclusion Index, those 220-plus securities, less than 10% of the revenue was generated outside of China. Not just in the United States, but just generated outside of China. So ultimately, I think the loser, there are no winners in a trade war, but U.S. equity investors ultimately will bear the highest burden, because of U.S. companies tend to be global multinationals. A lot of those companies have a lot of exposure in China. At the same time, companies in China tend to be more domestically oriented and have very limited exposure to the U.S. economy. So that's, I think, something that hasn't really been told, is just if trade war rhetoric and implementation pick up, it's not Chinese stocks you should be worried about. It's U.S. equities are going to bear the brunt of that.
Well, again, that's very interesting, because that is basically not the story that I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere here. So we'll see how this plays out. And we're not looking to be political. We're looking to be financial and prudent here. So what else were you telling the people on this roadshow tour that we haven't mentioned here, Brendan?
Well, I think one of our one aspect that, you know, with the roadshow was one to highlight to investors the importance of understanding index methodologies. You know, we've all adopted the ETFs and index funds in a big way, but you know, how well do we really understand those methodologies? And
great,
we
point.
Brought MSCI
great
along
point.
With us.
Yeah. Now you worked in the index world before joining CraneShares, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I've spent the last 17 years in the passive investment space. I've worked for the largest provider of ETFs globally, where I just, out of just good fortune, happened to go work for them back in 2001 as they were starting their ETF business. And certainly, I've always believed that. Yeah, you know, it's funny to me, Charlie. You know, you'll see these interviews with these CEOs of these major U.S. any financial firm, and they'll say, "Oh, this is such a powerful person," right? But ultimately, you know, MSCI's Global Investable Market Index methodology dictates how the largest asset managers, what they're invested in, and no one's read it. I have. I mean, I've got these long trips to China where I can plow through those 190 plus pages, but that is the most important document in finance. It's funny to me, you know, people will say, "Oh, now what book, you know, what finance book should you read?" And people will say, "Oh, you know, Ben Graham's The Value of, you know, Value Investing," or Reminiscence of a Stock Operator. And yeah, I mean, I've read those books and they're great, but there's no single document that controls more money, $14 trillion, than MSCI's Global Investable Market Index methodology. Now, how many people have read it? I would argue very, very few investors have that document up on their bookshelf.
You know, the list is short, I'm sure.
For sure.
Here. So, yeah, those are great points. And you having come from the world of indexes, you know, that's great news. And, you know, we had a different interview with someone else who had come from the world of indexing. And he had similar kind of comments. We get into these ETFs, but we don't really know what is there. So
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, this is kind of interesting, Trey. I mean, it's a little bit off topic from China, but three of the four largest ETFs globally are benchmarked to the S&P 500. At the same time, you know, wouldn't you agree that Elon Musk is one of the most iconic entrepreneurs of our time?
Yeah.
But Tesla isn't in the S&P 500. And now, why is that important? It's because hundreds of billions of dollars are invested according to the S&P 500. I mean, again, three of the four largest ETFs globally are benchmarked to the S&P 500. We're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars are benchmarked to those three ETFs alone. And that doesn't even include index funds and such. But Tesla's not in there. It's very interesting when you really study these things.
And that's,
a lot of that study has gone into building our exchange-traded funds, is understanding these nuances.
Yeah. So, Brendan, quickly before we leave here, One Belt, One Road. What do we see? How quickly do you see things proceeding on things and possible opportunities in your One Belt, One Road ETF?
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with MSCI to construct a portfolio that holds the companies that we believe will win these projects that we're talking about, the potential for trillions of dollars in building roads and railways and airports and communication networks to allow for economic trade to take place between the 70-plus countries that have signed on to the Belt and Road Initiative. So we hold, you know, construction companies and pipeline companies. We've done our best to try to own companies within China as well as within the emerging market and frontier world that are potentially going to win these projects. And already, you know, they've built a hydroelectric dam in Pakistan. They're paving a road between Lahore, Pakistan, and China. In Malaysia, they're building two different railroads, are being built as we speak, one in the north and one in the south. And so this is happening. It might not hit the radar of folks here in the U.S., but this is happening. And over the next several weeks, there's going to be a significant uptake in the, you know, basically the disbursement of project deals. And, so it's kind of an exciting time.
Okay, so Brendan, for those who would like to know more, where can you go?
www.craneshares.com.
Okay, and again, the exact ETF that is tied to the MSCI index is
KBA, Kilo Bravo Alpha.
Okay, well, Brendan, this was great to have this conversation. Congratulations to you guys on this change with MSCI and to what I'm sure was a very successful 8-day road trip and tour. And best of luck to you and Crane Shares in bringing Americans the opportunity to invest in China effectively and productively. So thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Charlie.
Again, we've been talking with Brendan Ahern, Chief Investment Officer for Crane Shares, a family of China-focused ETFs. You've been listening to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio. We'd love to hear from you at info@strategicinvestorradio.com. Go to our website to hear podcasts of all of our interviews and shows, strategicinvestorradio.com. I'm Charlie Wright, wishing you an enjoyable week and productive investing.
Strategic Investor Radio is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. Content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host Charlie Wright or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.